Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Cost of Endless War and Austerity panel. My name is Anna Edwards. I'm a member of the Virginia Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And our co-chair is Christine Marie with Connecticut United for Peace. We want to go ahead and get the panel started. You've had a lot of really good welcoming remarks in terms of the relationship between the topic of the panel or the breakout group that you've been a part of and UNAC, United National Anti-War Coalition, and this conference and its purpose this weekend. So I'm not going to try to add another version of that, at least not from me directly. But what I did want to do is read a Black Left Unity Network solidarity statement with the conference. I figure that's the best way to go to this. The issue of what the wars are costing us will be made very clear by our panelists today. The Black Left Unity Network is a network of individuals and organizations committed to rebuilding the Black Liberation Movement as a critical element in the global anti-imperialist war. Stands in solidarity with UNAC. UNAC is consistent in its history of principled anti-imperialist and anti-war leadership. It has not faltered, even as other organizations and anti-war coalitions have acquiesced to jingoistic pro-war positions framed as anti-authoritarian and humanitarian interventions by the Obama administration and the anti-war left in the U.S. Taking clear, unequivocal anti-war positions as the bedrock of opposition to U.S. imperialism is especially important at this critical historical moment when the militarized, repressive apparatus of the U.S. state is being mobilized to silence and to contain the growing opposition to state-sanctioned violence in the internalized colonies of this country. Important because the strategy of domestic containment and repression from Ferguson to Baltimore is only the flip side of the coin of permanent war and militarization that is at the center of the settler colonial project that is the United States. The increased reliance on war and repression reflect the desperate strategy of an empire that has lost legitimacy. As the warmongers attempt to prepare the people for more direct intervention in Syria and to condition the people to accept martial law like what we've witnessed in Boston and Baltimore, it is important that the delegates and participants at UNAC declare to the people of the United States and the world that there is a real anti-war movement in the United States, a movement that is not afraid to be anti-war and anti-imperialist. A movement that stands in solidarity with all those who fight and struggle for human dignity, authentic national self-determination, and a world free from exploitation and domination of any kind. In that struggle, the Black Left Unity Network stands with the United Anti-War Coalition Conference and is preparing itself for the protracted struggle to build a new world. We have quite a slate of panelists for you, and the first person that we are going to bring up today to open this topic is Shafia Mbalia. Shafia is a member of Black Workers for Justice, the Black Left Unity Network, the Imam Jamil Rap Brown Action Network, and Muslims for Social Justice. Though she is raised in the United States North, she has lived in North Carolina and Georgia for the past 35 years. Shafia was one of the first women that I met at the Black Left Unity Network and the Black Workers for Justice, who has had a profound impact on my sense of place in terms of the South being at the center of the struggle for Black liberation and Black lives. Shafia, welcome.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Anna, for that introduction. And thank you for inviting Black Workers for Justice among the other organizations that I am a part of. I'd like to add one more to that mishmash and hopefully break the rest of your stereotypes of Muslim women. and that I'm also a labor activist, a past officer in the National Association of Letter Carriers. At least the last time I checked, because they've been trying to throw me out for fighting for democracy in my branch. And I take that as an honor. So I just want to take all of these things together and just bring forward the whole question of the South. I know the issue is austerity, but until we also understand the actual nature of the United States as an imperialist state, with not only nations that it exploits and oppresses around the world, but black nation and brown nations and red people's nations, plural, inside the borders of the United States, then we will not have a real understanding of the relationship of struggle and what we are calling the anti-war movement inside the United States. The basic orientation of Black Workers for Justice is guided by our basic understanding of the key role that the South continues to play in both the historic as well as current stage of development of the United States and global capitalism, and how it impacts both Black people in the U.S. South and all other peoples here. In the past 20 years, the South has been in a boom in its service economy, manufacturing base, petrochemicals, aerospace, high-tech industries, and the financial sector. Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, Mississippi, and Georgia have made the South a major region of the auto industry, with factories producing Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, Toyota, Kia, BMW, Volkswagen, GM, and Nissan. Germany has a large-scale, state-of-the-art steel mill in Mobile, Alabama. So those myths of the South being just them poor folks who ignorant and don't know what's going on is a whole nother ballgame. Two of the world's largest research parks are located in North Carolina and Alabama. The region is home to 65 Fortune 500 companies. It is headquarters of major banking corporations, the Bank of America, AmSouth Bank Corporation, BBVA Compass, SunTrust Banks, BB&T, and the district headquarters of the Federal Reserve Bank of America. The U.S. South is a major region of foreign corporate direct investment and thus a major region of capitalist globalization. It contains in Charlotte, North Carolina, the second largest finance center in the world. The South's share, now get this, catch these numbers. The South's share of the U.S. gross domestic product is 31%. As a region, the combined domestic states product of $3.73 trillion makes it the fourth large economy in the world. There's the United States at $12.36 trillion, China at $8.86 trillion, Japan at $4.02 trillion, and the South at $3.73 trillion gross domestic product. At the same time, 54% of U.S. military bases are located in the 11 southern states. We want to include in there also the command forces for the Pentagon, CENTCOM, the Joint Special Operations Forces, the Joint Operations Forces, the largest National Guard regiment in the country, as well as the Supreme Allied NATO Command are all located in the South. So when you want to talk about opposing the war machine of imperialism, you're talking about this is the heart of, the belly of the beast. The majority of Black people, close to 57%, live in the South. The Black Belt areas where the largest concentration of blacks li- where the largest concentration of black people live is a long stretch of contiguous black majority and significant minority counties with major areas of underdevelopment and the more blatant forms of political suppression, disenfranchisement, and is now the major region of global capitalism. The reverse migration over the past 20 years that brought about a 5% increase in black people in the South was also a period of migration into the South from throughout the Americas. Of the 101 million people in the South, about 40% are comprised mainly of black Native American, Mexicano, Latino, and Caribbean peoples, all victims of U.S. imperialism. The struggle for black political power thus becomes a key strategic factor in the struggle against U.S. and global capitalism and the global struggle for a revolutionary alternative. Forging an alliance amongst these forces is critical to defeating the military-industrial complex, aka global capitalism, aka imperialism. Black youth unemployment is the worst in the country at over twice the rate of white youth. Median wealth, here's another number for you. Median wealth of black women are $5. I say, the median wealth of black women is $5. The murder of black youth at the hands of police and white vigilantes and other acts of police brutality remain an ever-present threat to the safety of communities. The police are occupational force, ain't never officer friendly, ain't never been our friend. And so it is no wonder then when we get to the question of resistance, Ferguson is long, it started long before Ferguson. Let's go back to before Trayvon. Let's go back before Trayvon. Let's talk about Katrina. So when there is resistance, there is repression. And when people stand up, they are what? Incarcerated. We must stand with those men and women who have took the heat and stood the force. The bottom line is that the trade union movement has left these people out. Regardless of the fact that raise up, that despite the current calls by low wage workers, raise up, and some trade unions to raise the minimum wage and wages of those in fast food, the trade union movement lacks an effective national strategy to address the conditions of workers in this country. These conditions in sum total we understand it as the war on black America. And if you want to oppose the war around the country, then you best to oppose the war on black America. Our work is concentrated in main areas of building a southern, politicized, rank-and-file labor movement to exercise workers' power in the southern and U.S. economy, building bases for independent black working class-based political power to control basic resources and policy decisions, and fighting for community development and environmental justice. National oppression, while its depth and major history is anchored in the South, it is national in scope and constitutes a fundamental aspect of capitalism's exploitation of the U.S. working class, and support for its elimination tactically, currently in the form of supporting Black Lives Matter, elected community control of the police is a responsibility of all those who stand against war. Black Lives Matter, poverty is violence. Stop the war on Black America, stop the war on Brown America, stop the war on Black and Red and Working and Women America. Thank you.
That was pretty impressive. We got a lot of impressive people on this panel. As I look over the biographies of those, I think I can say that our next speaker is eminently suited as well to talk about the relationship between the war on the Black and Latino communities and working people in the U.S. to the wars on working people abroad. Ramiro Funes is a political journalist and analyst who's written extensively about Latin America and U.S. foreign policy. He's a regular participant in the movements for workers' rights, for immigrant rights, and against U.S. intervention in New York. Let us welcome from the National Popular Resistance Front of Honduras, Ramiro Funes.
Saludos. Hasta la victoria siempre. Greetings, comrades, friends, sisters, and brothers. First, I want to thank all of you for joining us at this year's UNAC conference. The presence of so many people here today is a testament to the urgent and frightening times we are living in, the era of endless imperialist wars. What's the goal of this meeting? The long-term goal is to build a united mass movement led by young people across the country in order to construct a better tomorrow, a future free of wars initiated by the United States government and the corporations that it follows orders from. The short-term goal is to plan a national, with this National Day of Action, we want to make sure that U.S. militarization is put to an end and that we say we're opposed to this capitalist expansion, we're opposed to imperialism, we're opposed to the oppression of all Black and brown people around the world, and we will stop and we will do whatever it takes by any means necessary to make sure that no one is subject to attack by U.S. imperialism and corporate interests. We are opposed to war at home. You can even look at Baltimore and Ferguson, and you see the war at home very clearly there. We also, in the U.S. especially, the white police officer responsible for killing Freddie Gray had a bail of $350,000. Meanwhile, the young revolutionary 18-year-old youth who was participating in destroying and breaking the police car was given a $500,000 bill. And that's completely not fair, and that's complete double standard. So we see that very clearly. The war at home is this way to try to frighten youth into organizing. They're trying to fine us. They're trying to make sure that we don't organize and talk about these things. They want us to just focus on making money and being rich and being like them. And selling us this dream that doesn't exist anymore. The American dream does not exist. It has never existed and does not exist. It's a lie. We need to realize we're in some major crises right now. Most of the world is becoming impoverished. There's so many wars. We have to put things together. So I'm inviting youth to this conference. Let's build a youth-led movement that actually stands for the people, all people of oppressed nations, for women, for Black women, for brown women. So thank you so much.
All of us here today are thinking about how to rebuild a movement against U.S. wars, how to grow a movement against U.S. wars and abroad. One element of that process is clearly going to be clearing the confusion. Part of that process is undoubtedly be untangling the web of lies fed to the U.S. population to explain the interventions of U.S. military operations in the Middle East, Central Asia, and Africa. One of the main and most precious resources we have in this task is Antonia Juhas. She's an energy analyst, writer, investigative journalist. She's an award-winning author, written 3 books on these topics, and co-authored 6 others. She's been to Afghanistan twice, has written extensively on the role of oil and gas in the wars in those locations. In addition, she serves on the National Advisory Board of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Please welcome Antonia.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Two very disturbing historical markers are about to happen at the same time. The United States is about to reach its highest point of domestic oil production in our history, at the same time as Iraq is about to surpass its highest domestic oil production in its history. Both of these markers are coming at the same time that the United Nations and every climate expert on the planet has warned us that to avert the worst of climate catastrophe, we have to keep at least 80% of fossil fuels in the ground. Instead of focusing on that, we're focusing on mass exploitation of natural resources at home and abroad. This panel is about the domestic costs of war and a sort of ironic, I guess, domestic costs of our war in Iraq has been a successfully put argument, or an argument that has done quite well, which is that, okay, if you don't want us to fight wars for oil, then you need to let us exploit as much oil and fossil fuels as possible at home. And that's exactly what is happening. And it's very similar to a mutation of an argument that we had made looking to the future of peak oil, and warning that when the world hits peak oil, we need to be very concerned. It's going to it will demonstrate how dependent we are on this resource, and once we don't have it as much anymore, we will see that everything is based on our dependence on this resource. Our public transportation, our fertilizers, our agriculture, our plastics. And for those of us who are making that warning, it was to say, look, this is another reason why we need to get off of this resource, right? And we need to start getting off of it now. And that was our argument. But what the industry did with that concern about peak oil was to say, yeah, you're right. It's going to be really bad. So therefore, you need to let us make sure we don't hit that peak. And that's what they've done very successfully. They have successfully pushed the peak further and further back. And the way they've done that is by moving into these incredibly harmful and exploitive new modes of fossil fuel exploitation, ultra, ultra deep water drilling, fracking, fracking for oil in the United States, which has been a part of the heart of the domestic oil boom, exploitation of tar sands, and increased militarization and weaponization to go after the oil that is also out there. So these two patterns are happening simultaneously. And one of the, tragic stories of the Iraq War is that it has actually been remarkably successful. And remarkably successful at achieving one of its primary goals, which was gaining access to Iraq for Western oil companies. So for 30 years before the 2003 invasion of Iraq, Western oil companies were completely excluded from Iraq, and today every single major Western oil company is active in Iraq and producing from some of the largest fields in the world. And that access actually expanded, so they got in as a result of the 2003 invasion, but just in October of last year, one of the primary objectives of the Bush administration going into the war was passage of something called the Iraq Oil Law, which was a sort of privatization light. And the Bush administration couldn't achieve that goal, but it was just achieved in September of last year under the Obama administration. After the August military intervention, Obama administration-led military intervention in Iraq, a new Iraq government was put into place, and that government has many of the people who the Bush administration had initially tried to get into higher positions in office who didn't stay put are now in leadership positions, and one of those is Abdel Mahdi, who is now the head of the oil ministry, who has now successfully put forward this long-sought agenda of the Bush administration, which is production sharing agreements in Iraq, which is basically what was the biggest wish list of the oil industry in Iraq, and that's now been achieved. The importance of linking not just the peace movement, but also the climate movement, I think is highlighted in the way the messaging of the peace movement has been manipulated to say, okay, right, if you don't want these things that are happening through wars to happen, if you want to eliminate our dependence on foreign oil than let us produce here. And at the same time as they're producing more here, they're succeeding in producing more there. And one of the key objectives that we can that can be achieved by linking the climate movement, environmental justice movement at home and abroad with the peace movement at home and abroad is making it so that they can't use our messages against us in different silos to achieve their ultimate objectives, which is what they are actually doing quite successfully. The decline in the price of oil has obviously been a short-term hindrance for the industry, but it's got some very serious long-term benefits for them. One of the most important being it looks like they're going to consolidate even further. So one of the largest mergers in history is about to happen. Shell Oil is buying BG Group, which is going to be the largest European oil merger. It's the largest oil merger since Exxon bought Mobil. There's rumors now that Exxon is looking to buy BP, which is quite possible. That would be just a behemoth, a sort of fairly unimaginable behemoth. And what that means is increased consolidation, increased power, increased political influence. And one of the primary things that we can do, if one thing would be to try and stop those mergers from taking place, but the other would be to watch what's happening with the industry as much as we have, as much as we watch every other piece of information that we're watching, and to look at how they're manipulating our own messaging to achieve their own ends, and to grow our movement stronger, to grow our movements stronger and more united by seeing the way these pieces fit together. We have to stop this extreme exploitation, whether it's being achieved through military means, offshore means, fracking means, bomb trains moving, exposing their drive to expand, their growth by merging, and their power. And I guess just to say in the last few seconds that I have, another sort of new iteration of the new war for oil in Iraq is Islamic State using its power to take over oil fields as well, and using the excuse to stop Islamic State from getting oil to create enormous environmental havoc in Iraq and Syria by targeting the oil infrastructure that Islamic State is going after. And I just want to flag that because it's another environmental justice terror to keep our eyes on and linking these movements. That time went really quickly. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Our next speaker is Lawrence Ham. He's been a relentless advocate for African American people and the cause of human rights for more than 30 years. Raised in, right up the road, Newark, New Jersey, he is a founder and current chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, which struggles for quality education, employment opportunities, access to health care, and against racial profiling and police brutality. And it epitomizes, along with the rest of POP, what it means to stay in the fight every day, all day, year after year, until victory.
Power to the people. Brothers and sisters, even though I would sacrifice some of my time, my conscience would not let me begin my remarks without observing that today is the birthday of one of the greatest fighters against racism and slavery, John Brown. And I think we should acknowledge this great abolitionist, John Brown, who was born May the 9th, 1800, who led an armed struggle against the enslavement of Africans here in the United States. And for that, he was hung on December 2nd, 1859. But John Brown was vindicated because ultimately it did take an armed struggle to end the enslavement. That was the Civil War, the most catastrophic war this country ever engaged in. Over 1 million Americans died in that war, but that's what it took to put slavery in the grave. And I thank John Brown for starting that great struggle against the enslavement of our people. And if John Brown were alive today, what would he say, brothers and sisters? I think he would say that slavery did not end, that it has in fact manifested itself in even more pernicious forms here in this country. And we see that today's topic is the costs of endless war and our austerity at home. And perhaps one of the greatest ways in which this was symbolized, Brother Clarence, was when I picked up that edition of the New York Times one day last year, and I thought I was looking at a situation in Palestine where young people were standing in front of military vehicles and men with uniforms on and automatic rifles. And in fact, it wasn't Palestine. It was Ferguson, St. Louis. It was Ferguson, Missouri. And that symbolizes the war abroad and the war that is being made on our people right here at home. And it's even more facile than this, brothers and sisters. The set through a program called the 1033 program and other programs, the same military vehicles and the same equipment that has been used in Iraq and in Afghanistan has been brought home and is being used by police forces, which are nothing more than military occupation forces of black communities here in the United States. The same equipment and the same armaments being used abroad is being used at home. And the same torture techniques that have been used in Iraq and Afghanistan are used on black men in prisons and jails across the United States of America. So the question we ask is, what is the root of all of this? And we see as we multiply our wars abroad and intensification of war at home. And this is not merely metaphor, brothers and sisters. We see an increase in police brutality. In fact, FBI figures revealed in the first 4 months of 2015 alone, over 400 people have been killed by the police here in the United States. And we have a liberation struggle going on, my friends who are here today. And that liberation struggle is not in Asia and in Africa and in Latin America. We got a liberation struggle going on right here in New Jersey. And we need your help. Right in the audience right now is the mother of Abdul Kamal. Michelle, stand up. This is the mother of Abdul Kamal, who was fired upon 15 times by Irvington police, hit 10 times. What did he have in his hand? Did he have a weapon in his hand? Did he have a gun in his hand? No, he had a cell phone in his hand. And we also have the case of Kashad Ashford, who was shot 9 times in the head. And we need you, brothers and sisters, to write and to call the U.S. attorney to investigate, to demand a civil rights investigation into the death of Abdul Kamal. And in the case of Kashad Ashford, who was shot 9 times in the head by state troopers, we need and we want you to write and call the state attorney general for New Jersey and demand that all documents and reports on this case be made public. And some of you have probably seen the video of Jerome Reed getting out of the police vehicle in Bridgeton, New Jersey, with his hands up, his hands empty, and he was shot down dead at point-blank range, not by a white police officer, but by a black police officer, because it's really not about white and black, it's about blue and the police being an instrument of repression, not only against black people, but against working and poor people in this country. Brothers and sisters, we are having a major march, and I hope that one of the resolutions that will come out of this conference
will be an endorsement of the event that we are having in Newark, New Jersey on the 25th of July. We are calling for a million people's march against police brutality, racial injustice, and economic inequality. And we need as many people as possible to gather in Newark, New Jersey, to say that black life not only matters to black people, black life should matter to all people in this country. We need you. We need you. So the question is asked, what is the cost of endless war? What is the cost of austerity? The cost of endless war and the cost of austerity is the abrogation and the violation of our civil liberties, our constitutional rights, our civil rights, our workers' rights, our women's rights, our democratic rights. This is the cost of endless war and austerity. The cost of austerity, the closure of our factories and the export of jobs, the closure of schools, not one or two, but dozens of schools at a time, the closure of hospitals, the foreclosure on homes. More people have had their homes foreclosed on in the last 5 years than in the last 50 years combined. This is the cost of endless war and austerity. And I say to you today, what is the greatest antidote to this endless war and austerity? The greatest antidote, the best medicine, is to build a people's movement in this country for the fundamental transformation of our socioeconomic system and the redistribution of power and wealth, as Dr. Martin Luther King called for. The greatest antidote to this endless war and austerity is to take all of our movements, our movement against war, our movement for a clean environment, our movement against racism, our movement against police brutality, our movement for workers' rights, and to bring these movements together into one great movement that can in fact transform this system. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Power to the people.
Clarence Thomas is a third-generation longshoreman. Do you all know what a longshoreman does? Do you know what all those longshoremen have been doing out there in Oakland? Clarence Thomas has been a member of Local 10 of the International Longshoremen Warehouse Union for 30 years, serving the union in several capacities, including multiple terms on the local's executive board. He is currently a national co-chair of the Million Worker March movement, and I'll bet he has something to say.
Brothers and sisters, friends and comrades, I bring you greetings from the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 10 in San Francisco. After that compelling message and call by Brother Larry Hand, I'm almost at a loss for words. I had a one-hour speech and only 7 minutes to give it, but we'll see what we can do. First thing is, I want to have people to join me in a chant. We've been sitting down for too long here today. It's going to be two chants, one of which is "From Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime." And the second one will be "From Baltimore to Palestine, occupation is a crime." Let's do it. From Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime. From Baltimore to Palestine, occupation is a crime.
This
One more time. From Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime. From Baltimore to Palestine, occupation is a crime. All right. Whoever was sleeping or thinking about it, they're awake now. I want to depart from the topic that's been told for us to present today, because I don't believe in redundancy. I got a lot on my mind, and I can cite you statistics about how 15 neighborhoods in West Baltimore have a life expectancies of babies is to be 64 years of age, compared to white segments of Baltimore where the life expectancy of a baby is 84. But I don't want to talk about that. You can read that on Google or anything else. What I want to talk about is what it means to the working class to be faced with these attacks. And how do we respond? That's only logical. I don't want anyone to misunderstand me when I say this. Rallies are very important. I was at the Million Man March in 1995, where some 2 million black men amassed in Washington, D.C. We organized the Million Worker March in 2004 in opposition to the Democratic Party and the officialdom of labor. I was at the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March in Washington, D.C. My wife and I attended the Million Woman's March in Philadelphia. Marches and rallies are important, but what makes them more significant is when there is action taken at the point of production by American workers. You see, we have to remember what George Bush told us. He says, I don't care how many people come out to a rally, that's just a focus group. There were millions of us that hit the streets protesting the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. But until such time as we do things to cut off the money, interrupt commerce, which is why I am so proud of our young people who've made the call for no business as usual. This is coming from a sector of the working class that is not part of organized labor. The fastest growing sector of the working class today is black and brown and immigrant workers who are underemployed, unemployed. Walter Scott, who was shot in the back in North Charleston, was a worker. Just because he was unemployed doesn't change anything. When Walter Scott was killed, we learned that his brother was a member of Local 1422 in Charleston, South Carolina, one of the most powerful labor organizations in the entire right to work for less state of South Carolina. Why is that important? It's important because longshore workers are some of the most important workers in the global economy. That computer that you have in front of you, those tennis shoes that you're wearing, the cars that you drive, all come off of a ship. And we are the ones who handle that cargo. And I'm so proud to stand up before you today to say that for over 80 years, my union, the ILWU, has been in the vanguard of all of organized labor in terms of taking positions on economic and social justice matters. Whether or not it was in 1935 when Italy invaded Ethiopia, there was a community blockade to stop a ship from being loaded full of metals and nickel on its way to Italy. Whether or not it was in 1939, whether 1 minute and 1 minute equals to two. Whether or not it was 1939, after Japan had invaded Manchuria, there was a blockade to stop the shipment of scrap iron to Japan. We've been on the front lines for a long time, and it ain't stopped. When Nelson Mandela got out of prison, he made a worldwide tour. And when he spoke in Oakland, he thanked the ILWU for 11 days refusing to handle South African cargo. But it ain't stopped there. We shut down 29 ports calling for justice for Mumia Abu-Jamal in 1999. But it did not stop there. Fast forward to 2010, after Israelis, commandos killed those people from Turkey, taking humanitarian supplies. We shut down an Israeli vessel for 24 hours, the first time in American history that labor's taken a position on the question of Palestine. I'm gonna wrap it up, but not before I say this. On May 1st, 2015, on International Workers' Day, ILWU Local 10, not in protest, but in opposition and resistance to the terror which is going on amongst our people all across the United States of America, shut down 5 Bay Area ports. And I want to know this. Where is the rest of the working class? When we shut down the port, we shut down the port at great risk. Right now, there are delegations going to Washington, D.C. to put longshore workers on the West Coast under the Railroad Workers Act so we cannot strike. Are you going to let them isolate us? Every port in the United States of America should have been shut down. If you want to end police murder, if you want to end any economic inequality, if you want to end segregation, if you want to end oppression and racism, you have got to shut down capitalism. We need to be strategic. We need to understand that's what time it is. An injury to one is an injury to all. Thank you very much.
I know Rolanda is going to kill me, but we put Rolanda after those two on purpose. Rolanda Cleopatra McMillan.
Yes, ma'am.
She is an entrepreneur. She is a human and social rights activist. She is a community leader, a youth advisor, and a member of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, to our honor. She is a McDonald's restaurant worker. She is a workers' leader in the Raise Up for $15 campaign. And I think she can talk about the cost of war at home and abroad through that.
Bring us home, baby. Bring us home.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. What's going on, UNAC?
How y'all doing? Anna said all that, but I don't know. After all that, I'll tell you, we are powerful. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
War. War. Worldwide, all types of war. All types of war everywhere, all over this planet Earth. What is the war for? What is it for? And why? 9 times out of 10, it's based on greed and the id. And what is the id? The ego. All you college people, y'all know what ID is. But I say no! I say no. Freedom is given by the Creator to all of us. So we are, what, fighting ourselves, and therefore fighting against nature, becoming not natural. It's cause and effect. We end up with nothing but death and destruction. No justice, no peace. So we are left with what? Capitalism. All over with the people everywhere, all over the world. Instead of living on the earth for all the people and sharing everything and enjoying the world and growing, we end up being fight, fight, fight for your own rights. We are all equal. There are no big, there are no small. Communicate, what we gotta do is we gotta communicate, adapt, enhance, and get out there and grow. We can have it all if we do it together. Who are we? We are Raise Up, also known as the Southern Workers Organization Committee. It is a movement of fast food workers across the South. We are from every race, nationality, and religion, but we are united as workers in demanding that fast food corporations pay us enough to feed our families. What we want. We want a $15 an hour living wage. To start. Most of us are working 2 and 3 jobs and still cannot feed our families. We deserve more, especially when fast food corporations are making record profits. They can afford it. Freedom to join a union. Unions are organizations of workers that use their strengths in numbers to fight for better working conditions. We believe that all workers should be able to have unions at their workplaces without facing retaliation from their employers. Dignity and respect. Dignity and respect. Fast food workers is one of the most difficult jobs in America. We want to be treated and respect and get the respect that we deserve. Did you know? That means that employees are supposed to have a free choice in deciding whether or not they want to use their rights to organize. Anything that an employer does to interfere with their free choice is against the law. And we got 101 of these laws. And we got 101 plus corporations that don't give a damn. I work for McDonald's, and they break the law all the time. I've worked for many, many years. I've worked for the Carpenters Union, Local 388. I've worked for 15 years almost as a worker at the Internal Revenue under the National Employees Treasurers Union. I am a union person. I am an employer, I am an entrepreneur, and I am pro-union. Always have been, always will be. My main focus today is to just get everyone to understand that with the panel here and all of you and everything that we're doing, my main focus is to get us to come together and do the right thing for ourselves, for our families, and for the people on this planet Earth. The citizens of the world are tired of being used and abused and most of all, murdered. And most of the time, for nothing at all. Free those prisoners, the political ones, everybody. I'm so sick of it. I'm done. I'm so sick of it. All I know is, what do I want? 15, freedom, justice, equality. We want it all. We deserve it all. We deserve it all. Give it up or else. Give it up or else. I cannot take it no more. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I know y'all sick and tired of hearing people say they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. But I will leave you with that last thing that I really wanted to say to everybody. This is economic warfare. Y'all know it, we know it, they know it. But as St. Augustine said, an unjust law is no law at all. And they've been using them against us forever. And now it's time for us to make our own laws. Freedom, justice, and equality. Today and every day. Thank you.
So we have one final element of this panel. There's a union that time after time brings busloads of workers to major demonstrations. There's a union here today that again and again provided sound and stage for anti-war, Occupy, and the Black Lives movements. And this union has been in a fight for their lives. They've been threatened with concessions, existential threats from Viola, a French-based global conglomerate. It's the Boston Bus Drivers Union. I'd like them to come up now. United Steelworkers, 8751. Now, they tried to stop this union by firing four of its leaders. The rank and file responded to that threat by electing those four fired leaders in a solidarity election this week, saying no. Their felony charges have been defeated, but the truth is that they're still facing charges. I want to read the names and urge you to take action. We have before us from the Boston Bus School Drivers Local, President-elect Andre Francois, Vice President Stephen Kirschenbaum, Treasurer-elect Georgia Scott, Recording Secretary Claude J. Saint-Germain, Executive Board Guide-elect Chantal Casimir, Team Leaders Nora Braggs and Bobby Trainham. Let's give them a round of applause for fighting the good fight. And we urge all of you here who've learned about their case today or are re-inspired to call the Mayor Walsh in Boston. He can order the fired union workers rehired, and I'm sure you can find out more about it outside. So they voted this week to come here and express their solidarity with our effort. Let's express our solidarity with their effort to defend workers under attack here at home. Thank you all very much. Now, this is the end of our panel, but don't get up. Before I close, I just want to draw the obvious conclusion. I don't know about you, but I think it's pretty clear that we should feel optimistic. We have some of the raw materials, the leadership for rebuilding a movement that can link the wars against working people abroad and the working people at home. We've seen testament to that today, and it's obviously a real possibility before us. If you want to be part of that effort, please do not leave without getting your organization to join the United National Anti-War Coalition to be part of the discussions and activities to advance that perspective. Next, I'm going to introduce, and so, oh go ahead, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's an honor for us to be here today. It's an honor personally for me to be here. Excuse me for saying this. Every time is a such an event like this happen on a Saturday, I have to say this. I worship my Lord on Saturdays, but after my church, there is no other place I'd like to be than this place here. Because I was told by my same Lord that if you're doing good, it's all lawful. And coming to an event like this where they talk about free Mumia from illegal injustice that the police and government put on him and on all the other political prisoners, this is doing good when you come to stuff like this. Because I am from a union, like you heard before here, that it's a union that's been fighting since the union has been founded by one of the founders here. The only founders left in the union is Steve Kirschbaum from the Workers' World. And I learned a great deal of things from this union right here. This is why I said I'm proud to be here today to ask to end racism, to stand with people that says end the wars and stuff, put money in educations, and have equal opportunities for workers all over the place, and stop police brutality. With this, we participating in Boston, where we're from, in all the justice, economic justice march, protests, even run the risk of getting arrested by cops in these things. I'm from a union that actually went to jail for standing together for justice. So with that, I have to give you a short history about this Violia. The Violia is not that I want to do publicity for them, but before they came, they fingered four of us out. You can see on our breast pocket right here, there was the hands of the four picture with four of us on it. And on the table where you are, there is leaflet with our pictures on it that says call the mayor and everything else. They fingered us out before they even came. And much to their luck, when they came in, they find a weak leadership there. This is where we got a break from the union. The union went to a sabbatical for 3 years. It's a bad one, unfortunately. But we were, along with people like you, good folks like you, that fight these companies. We were able to fight these companies. We still have some challenges because the four of us still being illegally fired. The mayor is playing little divisions with the small group, with the old regime. But thank God that we won the election by a landslide for all positions that the team won. Our team is called Team Solidarity. This morning we left Boston at 6:30 to get up here, and I would spend the whole day here to be able to address you, to talk to you, because we still have some issues to work on. But I want to thank everybody that goes out to Boston and went to Boston to be with us in all the thing. Besides, there was a continued frame up to try to put our founder in jail on some Trump charges. It spent about almost 6 months in the courts, but we won this. We keep having victories after victories when you have power like this, when you stand against injustice, when you stand with people that wants to do the right thing by the people. So I'll end by saying, let's stay together, let's continue the fight, have some of you join the fight with UNAC and with Workers Well, so we can have a powerful organization or movement that have actions and everything else to continue to win the thing against imperialism, against everything, evil doers out there. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Let me hear you say union!
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 Thank you.
Union!